All right, guys, good decision. Thanks for downloading America's number one podcast. Hey, have I told you all about AVG Cleaner? Did you know that the more you use your Android phone, now this is only for Android users. I get people tweeting me all the time. But the more junk that you go through on your phone, the more that it accumulates. You know, your apps usually hide these things and keep them, and then they download it on their own later. But over time, it just eats away at your limited disk space, and it can even slow down your phone. How annoying is that? But there's an easy fix called AVG Cleaner. This is totally free. Not selling you anything. It's just an app. You download it on your phone. You can do it right now from Google Play. It not only cleans all the hidden junk on your phone, but it will give you a longer battery life, and it speeds up your phone. It does it all for free. Just download AVG Cleaner from Google Play. From there, you can do some really cool stuff. You can clean up all the hidden junk that we were just talking about with one tap. You can see an easy breakdown of your battery life, how much you've got left for talking, watching movies, surfing the web, whatever you want to do. And best of all, you can even turn on the auto clean, and AVG Cleaner will do all the work for you. Just tell it what you want removed, and it will clean up all this junk on a daily, weekly basis, whatever you want to do. It'll do it automatically. Set it one time. And it's free. If I mentioned it's free, so go to Google Play, search for AVG Cleaner. AVG. I want to make sure that you can hear me there. AVG Cleaner. Download it right now. That's AVG Cleaner. Now, let's start the show.
He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen, and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now, Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
Well, here we are again. Happy Wednesday, everybody. The moment each week you all look forward to. You know, today's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have Mr. Funky joining us, Ben Askren, 1FC current champion. Going to talk with him a little bit. John P. Marini, major guest of the show, will be coming up a little bit later on, too. You know, this has been an interesting week. This Grammy Award show went on well over, almost 2 weeks ago now. And this news won't die down. Kanye West came in to get his publicity stunt, which worked quite well. We're going to give him what he wanted right now. We're going to keep on talking about this. But my takeaway on this, first off, just to address Kanye, you know, this is a very talented guy. This guy's also a wimp. You can't be the mouthiest guy in the room and be the biggest wuss in the room at the same time. Though, oddly, it generally works that way. You see it a lot, all the way back to playground rules in school. The wimpy kid was always the mouthiest, hiding behind the idea of, don't touch me, you're bigger than me. And you see Kanye doing this all the time, but here, that really isn't my talking point on this. Here's my talking point. Kanye's argument is, to these artists, you're not the right winner because you don't have the right artistic value. You don't understand the art of singing on the same level that I do and that others do. And, you know, I can tell you, I have to deal with this as a consumer, as do you guys, in the movie industry. If you ever want to know what a really crappy movie is, go and see what the critics say is great. Because it's never a commentary on the movie. Whenever a critic of anything artistic, whether what Kanye's doing with musics or with what people like to do in the movie business, what they're really weighing in on is their own intellectual prowess that they deem to be greater than ours. They're able to see a movie in a higher intellectual form than we are. And they'll talk about the cinematography value and the acting value. They'll weigh in on all these values, and the only value that matters is the entertainment value. Don't sit back and tell us what a great movie is that did a box office of $20. But that's what they'll do all the time. I'll hear people argue that Daniel Day-Lewis is the greatest actor in the world. Daniel Day-Lewis is boring. It doesn't make a bit of difference if he's a master thespian. He can't sell any damn tickets because his movies are boring. Unlike The Rock, terrible actor, makes great movies. Jason Statham, far from a thespian, makes great movies. Go all the way back to Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's anything but an actor. And he makes the greatest movie. So Kanye's trying to weigh in on this and tell us what we should like because he's more intelligent than the rest of us are. And he can see the artistic value on a different level. And that's really weird. It doesn't matter if you're right or wrong. The people that decide are the consumer. If the consumer likes a song, it's a great song. That's it. There's very few actors, but there's a lot of people on TV. I hear people tell me that all the time. Oh, I want to be an actor. I want to be an actor. And I go, well, do you want to be an actor or do you want to be on TV? I mean, are you after the fame and money? Because if you are, all you need to do is be on TV. You don't need to be a great actor. You're looking at this all wrong. If you can entertain people, you can have a place in that space. And Kanye West wants to come up, you know, whether it was this year or a couple of years ago to Taylor Swift, who likely would have beat his ass. He wants to come up and tell us who the greatest album of the year is. Well, that's an opinion. He can share his opinion. But his opinion gets trumped by the people. It's popular. That's it. It's a majority. It's like who we elect president. We don't elect the best guy president. The guy that gets to be president is whoever has the most votes. That's it. There's no other value that you get to put on it. It's majority rules. It's called a democracy. It's called capitalism. So good for Kanye. He got a moment on the biggest podcast out there, this one. He's got plenty of pub on TMZ and other places, but the story needs to be told. And when the Kanye story is told, sure, he's a talented guy, and he's entitled to his opinion. But he's the biggest wimp in the room, and he's also the mouthiest. Stick around. Ben Askren coming up. You're welcome. DipYourCar.com. This is one of my favorite parts of the show, is doing this commercial sponsor, because I get more feedback on Twitter from people that are thanking me. Most people don't even know what dipping your car means. And as they learn, they love it. What's known as dipping is becoming the fastest growing trend in the automotive industry. It gives a person total control over the appearance of their vehicle. You can dip anything from your wheels, your emblems, your trim. You can dip your whole car. And when you've had enough of it, you just peel it off. I always struggle in explaining to people what dipping is, and I don't know how to explain it myself. It's like an ice cream cone when you dip it in the chocolate. Okay, it goes from a vanilla cone to a chocolate cone, but now you've got this shell around it that protects the rest of the cone. Am I making this? Is any of this clear? You guys got to go on to YouTube and check this out. Whether you buy it or not, you owe it to yourself to at least learn what dipping is so you can fit into regular conversations. Just go to youtube.com/ Dip Your Car. And you can check this all out. You go to the website, dipyourcar.com, if you want to. Almost 500,000 people in just 3 years have dipped their cars in countries all over the world. This will protect your car's original paint from the elements, debris, a little bit of rock chip, whatever might come your way as you're driving down the road. There you have a coating over your car. And aesthetically, it makes your car look any color you want. When you had enough of it, you just peel it off. And there is your original car. Doesn't hurt the paint. It's going to help the paint. It's going to protect it. It's putting a coat over it. Look, you can do any color you want. There's hundreds to choose from. Matte, satin, high gloss finishes, they're all available. All the materials, all the equipment that you would possibly need will be mailed to you. It all comes in the kit. You can get a step-by-step tutorial video for free on YouTube. You can do it right now. Without even buying it, you can go check this out so you at least know what dipping is. Look, you've probably already seen Dip Your Car's products everywhere. From the teenager's coupe to a soccer mom's minivan, to high-end exotic cars. You probably your neighbor's got one. You think, oh man, my neighbor just went out and bought the exact same vehicle that he used to have. No, he didn't. He dipped his car. So now he's got a totally different color, and it even fooled you into thinking he's got a brand new car. You can fool yourself. You want a brand new car? Don't go spend all that money. Try dipping yours first. Clean out the inside, dip the car. You have a totally different thing sitting in your driveway. It looks completely different. And almost nobody's going to know, and it's a lot of fun. You simply spray it on. You leave it on as long as you like. You peel it off when you're done. You want to change it every week? Go ahead. You want to leave it on there for 3 years? Go ahead. This stuff is great. DipYourCar.com.
This is Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
You ever wonder why razors are so expensive? Maybe it's because razors are loaded up with so much shave technology. Vibrating handle, 19 blades, a laser pointer, a compass, a thermometer, a back scratcher. You don't need any of that. And it's not fair to make us all pay for it. I was sick of paying out the nose for a great shave. That's why I made the switch to DollarShaveClub.com. DollarShaveClub.com delivers amazing razors and grooming supplies for a couple of bucks, which is what it should cost. It's simple and it's smart. It takes 2 minutes to get going, and then you never have to worry about razors again. Go to DollarShaveClub.com right now. Get a free handle, and they will send you replacement blades for just a few bucks. You can get blades every month, every other month. You can get a blade to arrive every day if you need it, and it comes like clockwork. Look, stop squeezing weeks of shaves out of a dull razor and start treating yourself to a fresh blade shave anytime you want. Believe me when I tell you, the DollarShaveClub.com blades are fantastic. I've never had a closer shave, and they're priced the way they should be. I go around throwing razors away left and right, and I still am saving money. Upgrade to the smarter way to shave. Get your shave gear where I get mine. DollarShaveClub.com/Chael. You're going to save for that. You're going to save time. You're going to save money. DollarShaveClub.com/Chael. That's DollarShaveClub.com/Chael.
This is Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
All right, we're back to Your Welcome. I've promised and now I've delivered. On the line, the one and only, the current ONE FC champion, one of the few great MMA fighters who has somehow remained absolutely undefeated, Ben Askren. Ben, what's going on, buddy?
Not much. It's getting ready to press the Rufus Sport. We got a big group of guys training today, got some big fights coming up, and everything's good.
What, now CM Punk's out there, right? How's he looking? Is he showing up to practice each day?
Shows up to practice every day, he's working hard. He knows he's a work in progress, and he's going to work on building that skill every single day, and hopefully by the end of the year or so, he'll be ready to get in the cage and beat somebody up.
Yeah, you know, and I like his approach to it. The one thing that when he first signed, there was all sorts of pushback and people that thought this was a publicity stunt. But the one thing that Punk did that I thought was really cool is he was just genuine, saying, man, this is just something I want to do. I don't have a whole lot of competitive years left. I'm going to jump in and do it. He never came out and said, I'm going to be the champion or I'm going to, you know, bring down Anderson or anything like that. He said, I want to do it.
Yeah, I mean, that might have been a good angle to run. But, yeah, he was very real about it, which is good. Coming from the background he did, you don't know what to believe in that sport sometimes. So it's nice. And, you know, that's how he acts, too. That's not just what he says in the media. That's kind of how he acts every single day in the gym.
Now, what's going on with ONE FC? You're the ONE FC champion. And let me tell you, the only thing I know about ONE FC is what I can read on the internet. I hear it's on television, but it's in Asia. I've never got to see it. Every now and then I'll get like some kid that can figure out how to make what they call a gift, and I can watch you finishing another guy in the first round. But tell me a little about ONE FC. Is that a televised event in some parts of the world?
Yeah, ONE FC is based out of Singapore. They're only about 3 years old right now. They're going to have, I think it's their 24th or 25th show coming up here in about a month. And it's huge in Asia. I don't know if you guys know anything about Asia, but it's free TV over there. So there's not like cable like we have. So everyone's just got the basic 7, 8, 9 channels or whatever it is. And we are on Friday night everywhere, prime time all across Asia. The last event they did was one of the first ones on mainland China, and that was broadcast all over China and got a huge amount of viewers. So right now they're really focused on growth in Asia. They're not worried about expanding in America because obviously the MMA landscape in America is saturated already. You got Bellator, UFC, World Series of Fighting, RFA. You got all these organizations, right? So they're not even worried about coming to America. They just want to dominate their region over there. If they can pull some of the best American fighters over, they're going to do that.
So when you say they have a show every Friday, do you mean they do a Friday night fights
no.
Once in a blue moon, or every Friday they've got some kind of content?
No, I'm sorry. When I meant that, our shows, the 1FC shows are live on Friday nights in prime time. But it's unique over there because there's no other endemic sport in that region of Asia that are big and popular. So people over there watch usually NBA or English Premier League, which airs either in the middle of the night or the next morning, depending on which it is. And so 1FC is the only Friday night prime time show for someone to watch in Asia if they wanted to watch sports.
Okay. Now, all right. Now let's rewind. Let's talk. You said you're walking into practice. When I think about Rufus Sport, you know, not only is Coach Rufus one of the best coaches out there, your facility is amazing. But when I think about that gym, I of course think about the Pettis brothers. Of course, think about you. Alan Belcher used to be out there. I know CM Punk is now there. Who else am I missing? If we're to name drop a little bit, who do you work out with on a daily basis?
Well, some of our other guys in UFC, we got Chico Kamen, he's a 125-pounder. We got Dust Ortiz, he's a 125-pounder in the UFC. We got Eric Koch, he's a 155-pounder in the UFC. We got Rick Glenn, who's a former World Series of Fighting champion. He just lost his belt. We got Marcin Held, he won the Bellator tournament at 155. Mike Biggie Rhodes, he's a 170-pounder that was in the UFC, and he just ended up losing and getting cut, but he was there. Pascal Kraus, who's in the UFC at 170. So, I mean, our roster is way, way, way deeper than what most people realize.
Yeah, that's impressive, man. You were dropping some of those weights, though. They're a little bit smaller guys. You got anybody in there?
Yeah.
Who kicks Ben Askren's ass in the practice room? Do you got anybody in there that's, you know, that's your size or can push you around a little bit?
I mean, we got a good amount of, like I said, Mike Rhodes, he was in UFC at 170, and Pascal Kraus is at 170 in UFC. Then obviously we got Eric Koch and Anthony at 155. They're both 155-pounders, and we don't have much above 170. We got one 185-pounder who's 18-6, so he's pretty solid. But I would say most of our depth is 155 and below.
So when you were coming, let's back up then a little bit. When you were coming through Missouri, when you were wrestling out there, you were the best guy in the country. And it was kind of by a lot. But was there anybody in the practice room that you would go into and would give you a beating? Were you always the best guy in the room?
I was at the end of my career. I was, and I you know what? I ended up finding, cause I think you should never be the best guy, period. So I would actually bring this guy over. His name is Plumman Poskolev. He took fourth in the 96 Olympics, and funny enough, he ended up going to school at Central Missouri. And he, you know, he's older, obviously. And this dude was a beast. So I would bring him over about once a week to wrestle with me just to keep me humble. But, I was on a tear there my junior and senior year, and most of our bigger guys were younger. So my brother was a freshman when I was a senior, and our heavyweight was a freshman when I was a senior, and those guys both ended up winning national titles. But at that point in time when I was a senior and they were freshmen, I was still kicking their butt.
Yeah, you know, that's a fine balance, too. Like, I kind of subscribe to the theory that you said that you should never be the best guy in your room. You should always be finding guys that can beat you. On the other hand, Ben, on the extreme other side of that, I remember back in the college days where you'd have guys, maybe they walked onto the team or weren't quite ready to be there, but over the years, they would get their butt kicked every day, and before you knew it, they just learned how to lose. And you could put them in there with an All-American, and they'd be a couple of points. They could have a 5-3 match with some guy that's an All-American in the country, or you could put them in a wrestle-off just within their room, and they're still going to find a way to lose by 2 points.
Yeah.
So there's a balance there.
100% is no. And I come from the theory that you got to have people on every level. The people who aren't as good as you can just kind of hammer on when you need that easy day. The guys who are at your level, so you got a good competitive mix on a daily basis. And then those guys that are better than you. So when you need to get your butt kicked, you can go with them too. So that, you know, I think that's the ideal situation. And then obviously, you know, college wrestling is tough. There's those guys who just can't take getting their butt kicked every day, and they quit. I mean, the attrition rate in college wrestling is, you know, in my, I think my freshman class was 15 kids, and I want to say three or four made it all the way through the 5 years.
Yeah, you know, I think from a coaching standpoint, the number one thing that trumps technique, training, is motivation. If you've got to be a motivator, because keeping people involved, particularly in a sport like wrestling, that is just so grueling, and there's very little reward to, that's the key. You got to keep a guy motivated. I'm working with my nephew right now. He's 7 years old. He doesn't want to do his push-ups. He doesn't, you know, practice comes around. He wants to go talk to his mom, and he wants to drink his juice. He wants to do all this stuff. And I can't come down on him. One, he's seven. And two, that's my job as the coach. My job is to make him understand when 4:30 rolls around, we wrap up our hands and we go into practice. And so I don't hold it against him, but it puts me in a tough spot where I've got to constantly find ways to keep him motivated.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, 100%, that wrestling, there's not a lot of rewards besides, I'm going to quote Terry Brands, that intensely self-satisfying feeling of getting something you've worked very hard for. And that's about all you're going to get out of wrestling, right? And so a coach's job is to keep those guys, because wrestling, right, it's unique, because if you're in basketball and you suck, you're going to go sit on the bench and watch everyone else play. In football, if you suck, you're going to stand on the sidelines and watch everyone else play. In wrestling, on a daily basis, if you suck, you're getting your face ground in the mat every single day. So, yeah, like you said, in wrestling, man, that coach has got to figure out how to motivate his troops on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, and it seems like on everything, you know, because MMA is just an extension of wrestling. It's that same deal where, it, you know, you're not drafted to be there. You're a volunteer army. You're showing up each day because you want to. And so many days, you don't want to. You're just pretending. And that's really the key of a good coach. The number one thing, I mean, it's not teaching you how to throw a jab or shoot a double leg. It's just getting you in the room, getting you changed, getting a smile on your face, and getting you through a two-hour workout.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's, you know, when you watch Tom Brands of the world or the Jay Robinsons, you see some of the film, and those guys are freaking outstanding motivators. You know, anyone just can go to Flow Wrestling and type those guys' names in, and you'll see some motivational speeches they give, and it's going to get you pumped up to go work out.
All right, so in the world of MMA, man, who is it that you want to fight? If you had an ideal fight, and I would imagine at one point it was St. Pierre, but with him retired, give me a name. Who at 170, or even 185, whatever weight class, what is your ideal matchup?
Johnny Hendricks, for sure. Obviously, he beat me in high school when we were kids. I was 17 years old. He came up at the Dapper Dan All-Star Classic, or not Dapper Dan, Dream Team. He beat me there. And then we were the different weights all the way through college. And, man, the guy he's just so unlikable once you get to know him. And that is just one guy I'd like to get in the cage with. And obviously, he's also really highly ranked, so it would do a lot for my career also.
Yeah, Johnny's a badass. You know, it does surprise me that you say his name, because you guys had that history when you were kids. And it was so tough. You know, those matches were so close. I've seen some of those. They're on YouTube. I remember an 8-7 match. It was 1 point. It was right down at the end. It favored Johnny. But it does surprise me that you haven't had enough of that and just go, look, I'm good. I've had it. And he's unlikable, huh? I don't know Johnny very well, but that does kind of surprise me.
Yeah, he would, man, all the way through college, obviously Oklahoma State, Missouri, we were rivals. And it was like all the way through college, you'd just find these unique ways to squeak out matches when you were just like, this dude's going to lose. And all of a sudden he'd win. You'd be like, come on, how did that guy win? I mean, the one that comes to mind, so just, it just flashes in my mind, is Tyron Woodley, who's obviously in the UFC now, who I'm sure would love to fight Johnny Hendricks, was wrestling Johnny, and it was 1-1 in the third period. And Tyron was in a shot, and Johnny kept sticking his fingers in Tyron's mouth. So Tyron ended up losing his cool, and he bit him, right?
Sure.
And so there you go, 2-1. Johnny Hendricks wins the match. And you're like, did he really just win?
Oh, because wait a minute, you're saying when he bit him that the referee awarded Johnny a point.
Exactly.
Wow.
So, you know, that's what won him the match. So I think that at the end maybe Tyron tried a desperation throw and gave up another 2 points, but at the point of the bite, it was 1-1. And, I mean, there was so many matches with Johnny that were just like that, where you're like, this stuff is going to lose. And, you know, something random happens and he wins. I mean, the Charles match is simple. Brian Charles played on this. It's what most people look like is a pin. They don't call the pin, and they only give him 2 back points. And then in the third period, he gets 2 questionable takedowns to the mat that were his first NCAA title. So... yeah, that was, man, I don't like that guy.
I didn't.
Don't get me going.
You know what? That actually gets me going. That fires me up, man. I like a good old-fashioned rivalry, especially one that dates back to when guys were teenagers. That's fun. Now, when you bring up Tyron Woodley, man, he's in a unique spot. And just to set it up for our listeners, you guys were college teammates. You still work out a little bit together. But he's in a tough spot as I see it. Maybe you can shed some light on this, but he's a 170-pounder. Straight-up badass, but he's in the room with Hector Lombard, 170-pounder, badass. He's in the room with Robbie Lawler, the world champion, same weight class. What do these guys do? And I know from Tyron's standpoint, or at least from his history, you got to compete with your buddies. That's what it is to make a college wrestling team. You're all in the same room. You're all friends. You all hang out. Sometimes you're roommates, but only one guy can make the spot. What's it like on a daily basis at the ATT, man? Is there tension in there or what?
Yeah. Well, and I was tired of his last camp up here in Milwaukee, so he wasn't down there. But from my understanding is those guys none of those three really spar with each other. And I'm not there, but that's my understanding of the situation is, Hector's a hothead and he likes beating up the guys who are new and aren't very good to make him feel good about himself. And I know I've heard that from many people and seen it firsthand. And so, yeah, I've heard those three don't really go together barely at all.
Yeah, that's got to be weird, you know, because those guys all put out interviews, too. And Robbie probably lays back the most, and he can because he's the champ. But Robbie has even said, you know, I'm the number one contender. Before he had the belt, I'm the number one contender. He knew those guys were in the weight. Hector, like you said, you know, he's a hothead. He's going to fight anybody. And, of course, Tyron comes from that background of you take on your friends. It doesn't make any difference. But those guys are going to have to figure it out at some point. The UFC can't just keep them all apart.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. And obviously, Hector was supposed to be in that number one contender bout, which obviously it got called off this morning, and there's no real explanation to it, versus Rory McDonald. And so I guess had he won that one, it looks like he'd be fighting Robbie Lawler for the title. But, you know, we don't know if Robbie's going to get that rematch against Johnny, or we don't really know what's going to happen. So I think that division's kind of a little bit up in the air at this point until we get a few more fights down the road.
You know, what do you think when they ask teammates about fighting one another? And one of them comes out and says, no, we'd never do it. Never. Well, you know, if they paid us a ton of money, we would. I mean, isn't that a little disingenuous when you make a statement like that?
Yeah, definitely a little bit. I mean, I don't think I would because, listen, there's all these dudes I don't like that I would love to fight. So why am I going to fight my friend that I do like?
Right.
So that's, you know, that's me. And maybe it's because I haven't been in a situation where I've fought everyone else and there's really no one else left for me to fight. But at this point... man, there's so many dudes I don't like. I could be fighting for years for them.
Now, when you talk about that, let's go back to 1FC. Are you locked into that contract? Do they have you tied down for a year, 2 years?
Yeah, I got quite a bit left on the contract. So I'm just going to keep beating people up. That's my job, right? Beat people up, make some money.
Absolutely. Now, Rich Franklin, former UFC champion. Rich Franklin was named as the vice president over there. Am I right about that or matchmaker? He's named as one of the two.
No, he's not matchmaker. He's the vice president. He has the exact title. I think it is, but don't quote me on that.
Okay, but is that for name recognition only, or is Rich involved? And the reason I ask is my understanding was Rich lived in California running a juice business, and I know, as you said, 1FC is located out of Singapore, so he didn't move over there, did he?
Well, every time I've been over there, they've been having Rich work his butt off. So it's definitely not just a title for him because he's been flying all over the world. Every time I've been over for a fight or, you know, been over for, you know, I go there and train a little bit early. Every single time I've been over there, he's been flying here and flying there and doing media and doing press. And, yeah, so he's definitely not just in it for the title. He is, man, they're keeping him busy.
Yeah, that's interesting to hear, man. That's really interesting. Do they have a good backing behind them? I mean, from
very
a financial
good,
standpoint,
good, yeah.
really? They got good feet in the ground.
Yeah, I don't know if I can speak too much on it, but yeah, they're solid, man. They know what they're doing. They have an outstanding business plan. They've already executed on a lot of it over the first 3 years, and man, they're really set to have a really big year this year. I mean, they're gonna do 10 shows in China alone this year. So, and they, you know, I think they're shooting for about 24 shows this year, which would be a huge growth over last year.
That's really hard to sink your teeth into, because who owns it? Isn't it an American guy? I thought it was like a Harvard business grad. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, I believe there's some Harvard business people involved there. I think it was some business people who are really interested in the mixed martial arts community, and they want to see something like succeed. Victor Kui, he's the CEO. He's the guy that I deal with that runs it on a day-to-day basis. But I know he always tells me, hey, I got to go to the board with this, or I got to go to the board with that. So I definitely know he definitely goes back and gets feedback from whoever it is that's on the board. It's probably the ownership.
Right. And the reason I ask is it's just so difficult for an American. It's so difficult for anybody to break into China. You know, it's nearly impossible.
Yeah.
And the politics and the bureaucracy that's involved in that. So I was just wondering if the guy's nationality and how he pulled that off, because it is an impressive feat.
Yeah.
But you know, I can tell you, we want to see you over in America. You know, I want to be able to see you fight some more. And I know I just asked you this. I hope you didn't answer, because if you did, I just spaced it. But did you tell me how long you're locked into those guys for?
I didn't give you a specific amount, but it is quite a while.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you made a career move over there. That's a great one.
Uh-huh.
You know, you went on Inside MMA. And
bad fucking guy.
Quick plug for those guys. The single lowest rated MMA show on TV. But Kenny Rice ends up giving you the boot, and then he kind of gets a spanking from Andrew Simon, the president of the company, who said that was wrong and quickly apologized. How did that all unfold? Did Kenny get a hold of you personally after that and say, look, yeah, man, I was wrong?
No, Kenny never said anything. And, you know, I was actually quite offended by Boz's rebuttal that he put out there that I'm sure he didn't really mean himself. They probably wrote it for him. He posted it on his Facebook. But it was like, these dudes have me on a show. They know I'm controversial. They know I'm not going to give your, you know, boxed answers that everyone else gives. And they ask me a question. I go to give them my answer, and they cut me off. And I say, guys, if you're going to ask me a question, you can't just cut me off. But sure enough, they cut me off. And that was, you know what? Honestly, though, them cutting me off probably got my message out, what I was saying, more than just if it would have been a regular interview and I got to keep speaking.
Yeah, it was just a weird thing to do. I mean, on one hand, it was extremely unprofessional, but it was also rude. And what has to be taken in is if somebody's going to watch that interview, it's much like today's show. They're not tuning in to hear me. They can hear me anytime. They're tuning in to hear my guest, who is Ben Askren. So, you know, when they cut you off and they attempt to do some form of censorship, it was just really interesting. You go, man, Ben's your guest, who you're not paying. He's the star of the show, who's here for free. You're getting paid to have him on. There has to be some level of appreciation. If you ask a guy a question, he gets to answer the question. If you don't like the answer, you don't get to cut him off. This isn't communist Russia. A guy gets to speak here. And I always just wondered how that played out. If Kenny ever apologized.
You know, I mean, I got like an official apology. You know, it's not bullshit, but whatever. I didn't get to. I wanted to debate Kenny on the economics of global MMA, because I don't think he knew exactly what he was talking about. And, you know, what I came to find out after that is that Mark Cuban, who owns Access TV, also is a shareholder or part owner of the UFC in some way, shape, or form. So obviously, I think the Inside MMA tries to look like they're neutral, but at some point they gotta say, hey, our owner, Mark Cuban, has loyalty to the UFC, so we can't let this guy rant on anymore, or whatever they thought I was doing.
Wow, I've never heard that rumor. I never heard that Mark Cuban had a piece of anything. That's a surprise.
That's what I've heard. Heard he bought some bonds or something a couple of years back, and so he definitely has some interest in the UFC.
Wow. Wow, well, there's some breaking news. I didn't know that right there. But, that was just weird.
That one, but I'm pretty sure about it.
Well, and you could be, you know, even if that's not completely right, you could be close on something. Maybe he, and I don't know, maybe that's exactly what it is, but maybe he owns a part of a company that's a sponsor of the UFC or a partner.
Yeah.
So there could be something like that, but I hadn't heard it. So there's our rumor of the day that we'll start right there. Mark Cuban.
Nice.
Part of the UFC. But I've always thought that was a little weird. You know, I've been a little hard on Kenny Rice over time myself because he just gets it wrong so often that I'm going, all right, you clearly don't follow MMA, and that's okay. You know, if you're the host of a show, there's a lot of, you can get some of those spots, but they're hard to keep, and he's managed to keep it, but he just doesn't follow MMA. He's a sports guy. He covers some football, and when I listen to him talk about MMA, I can tell, man, you didn't even watch the pay-per-view. You're just reading script that somebody printed for you. And it's a strange thing. It's just a really weird thing. What they did with you was it made them look bad.
Yeah, and I thought there's going to be more repercussions for Kenny. I really thought maybe they're going to let me on air, make this guy look like a dipshit. But they didn't do that. Kenny kept his job. You know, so at the end of the day, nothing really happened. He just got maybe a little spank on the wrist there and said, knock it off, Kane, don't do it again.
Yeah, I always make the joke that somewhere, if you read the credits at the end of that show, Kenny Rice's dad has to be like a producer or the executive director or something, because that just is a weird placement. You take a guy that does not do, follow, participate, watch MMA, and you have him host an MMA show, but whatever.
What is his background? It's not MMA, so what is... Do you know? I have no idea.
I haven't the foggiest idea. You know, I haven't the foggiest idea. He was upset with me one time because I was upset with him. And I came out and I was doing an interview and I said, Kenny Rice is a liar. And why Kenny Rice wouldn't then go, well, hey, what did I lie about? You know, let's discuss this. I want to do better at my job. He just never did that. It didn't make any difference to him. And he got upset, and I did it with an interviewer named Ariel Helwani. So then he was mad at Ariel, even though I'm the one that said it. It just, Ariel happened to be holding the microphone. It was just this really strange thing, you know, but Kenny was going around and he was making up the name of drug tests. Here's Kenny's big statement. So-and-so failed his steroid test. He said it about King Mo. He said it about me. He said it about Vitor Belfort. So-and-so fails his steroid test. I'm going, Kenny, there's no such thing. There is no test out there called a steroid test. So now, not only have you made up the name of a test, you also then labeled that we failed the test. And I just had a real resentment for it. And he would always push back and go, well, testosterone is technically a steroid. Well, it's no technical about it. Testosterone's a steroid. But there's no such thing as a steroid test. And the mere fact that you are miscategorizing the name of a test that doesn't even exist means that you don't have the foggiest idea what you're talking about, but you go on week after week and you keep saying these things.
Yeah.
So at any rate,
he's got to get his facts straight, huh?
He's got to get his facts straight, man. If you're going to come out, particularly if you're going to say, you know, and then he's mad at me for saying he lied. Well, it's like, well, Kenny, one of us is right here, and it's me. There is no such thing as a steroid test. We did never take a steroid test. No commission gives a steroid test. You're the one that made up this term and then started saying the guys failed it. So if anything, he was wrong. Now, I will tell you, that is my one and only hang up, these two things. He cut you off. And he dropped this fake term called steroid test. Other than that, in his defense, the guy has been nothing but a gentleman to me.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time until he does something else that ticks you off.
Yeah, I'm quite sure it will be, too. In fact, in the spirit of fairness, I ran into him in a hotel one time. I was talking to Matt Lindland, was sitting there talking to him, and I went up and I was talking to Matt. And I'd never met Kenny, and I didn't have any level of fame or whatever in this industry. And I was hungry. And the only thing that was open was a Wendy's drive-thru, and I had no car. And so I was telling Matt this. I'm like, man, I walked up to the window and they wouldn't give me anything. They said I had to be in a car. And Kenny Rice, who did not know me from anybody, reached into his pocket, pulled out his keys to his car, and said, I'm the third car in the first line over there, and gave me his car so that I could go get a hamburger. So in his defense, these are the only two things that bother me, but they've bothered me for so long, and it's also bothered me that he's never reached out and go, hey, you said that I lied. What is it I lied about?
Yeah.
It's like, Kenny, really? Come on, man. Some level of professionalism.
He never reached out to me after the incident either. It was... Andrew Simon did, and then there was one other cat. I was producer of the show or something, maybe. I'm not sure exactly who it was, but man, it sounds like Kenny Rice just needs to grow up and be able to be humble and apologize a few times when he makes some mistakes.
I think that's right, man. All right, I've only got you for three more minutes now. You're already late for practice. You gave me a few extra minutes, so I want to hold you to this time frame. But I do want to talk, aside from fighting, just on a personal note. I came out. You asked me to be part of Flow Premier League 4, where you main evented and took on Clayton Foster. So I'm getting ready to come out to Milwaukee, and Front Row Brian comes out there, internet sensation, media mogul, the one and only Front Row Brian, but he beats me to it. He lands about 4 hours before I do. He comes over to your house. He starts drinking Jack Daniels Black like it's Coors Light, and by the time I land, I have a text message from you. My phone was dead, so when I power my phone up, I've got a text message from you that says, you tell me what I just said. Brian's been drinking Jack Daniels. He's in my living room, and he attacked me 8 times, and I had to put him down 8 times. What can you tell us about this situation?
Well, you know who kicked his butt more than I did? Well, obviously, the Jack Daniels kicked his butt. We did determine that night that Jack Daniels is not a performance-enhancing drug in any way, shape, or form. But Mark Bader of Flow Wrestling fame, Front Row Brian, you know, Mark's a little smaller, so I think Brian thought, hey, this guy's a little smaller. Maybe I can get this guy, right? Mark was looking like Aaron Pico, just snapping into the floor over and over again. You know, I was really impressed by Brian's ability to get up time after time and keep on fighting.
So wait a minute. Okay, let me tell you what I picture. Even just by your text when you told me the story, there was a movie called Borat. And Borat goes into a dojo, and he takes on the instructor. It lasts for about 2 seconds, and he's like, okay, I'm good. I understand. The instructor lets him up, and then Borat turns and attacks the instructor again, and this just keeps happening over and over. And eventually, it's hilarious, but that's how I'm seeing this. Like, every time you guys let Brian up, he's like, okay, no, I'm good, and then he just comes at you again. Am I anywhere close to the depiction of how it actually happened?
Yeah, that would be that was a good scene in the movie right there. But yeah, that was very, very. I mean, maybe not quite as aggressive as Borat. And you know, he'd give it maybe 30 seconds and maybe forget about how he just got slammed on the ground, and then he would think it was a good idea to attack someone again, and then he'd get slammed again. Then he'd maybe drink some whiskey, take 2 minutes, and think it was a good idea again. But yeah, I mean, a slowed down version of the Borat. I mean, it was. I did put a picture online. I didn't show Brian's identity because I know that's a secret to everybody. But I did show him getting choked out. I think Mark had him in a guillotine or something in the picture I posted.
Oh, that's classic. By the time I finally saw him, I got into the car. He met up with another buddy that ended up driving him over there. A guy named Matt to the airport. I come out of the airport. I see Brian. He's sitting in the front row passenger seat of the car. Eyes wide open, and he does not acknowledge my existence. Now, I don't fully relate. I've never had a drop of alcohol. I only take performance enhancers, so I don't know a damn thing about this. I can't. But he's wide awake. He's looking at me, but he does not form a word. So I throw my bag in. I sit in the car behind him. I reach over the seat. I kind of rub his shoulder, say, "Hey, what's going on?" Nothing. About 5 minutes into the ride, he's trying to form a word, but no word is coming out. It's just these noises. So Matt, who's driving, finally deduces, oh, man, this guy's about to throw up. So he opens the door. Brian starts throwing up. Eventually, he stops. We shut the door. We drive on to the hotel, which is only about a 2-minute drive. It's pretty quick. Well, in between him throwing up and the hotel, he throws up 3 more times, except now we're going 50 miles an hour. So he can't get his head out the door or the window, and so he throws up all over himself. So by the time we get to the hotel, he gets out of the car, and now he is sobered up enough to know that he's made a social faux pas, if you will. He wants to apologize to me. Well, he wants to apologize to me with a hug. But it's all over himself, you know, and I'm just like, God, and I just give him the hug. So now we both got puke on us. It's really gross, but I don't know what else to do. So we get up to the room, and, you know, Brian is classic. He can sleep anywhere, no blanket, and a spotlight on his eyes. He'll sleep on the floor.
When you're that drunk, yeah, helps a little bit.
I mean, he'll just be out. There's more times I've walked in where he's come to meet me places, and he's beat me to. I'll come in the room, he's out. Beer bottles absolutely everywhere. All the lights on, TV, everything. No blanket, and he's out cold. So we get back up to the room, and now it's me, him, and this Matt guy. And so he wants to apologize to us both again with the hug. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh,
and,
my God.
And give the bro hug. So now that we're in the room and I have throw up on me already, and I only have one change of clothes. You know, I only came in for one day to do this. And I kind of stop him politely, you know, and you got to be real passive aggressive when you're dealing with a drunk Brian. I go, hey, you know, you have this throw up on you. You might want to change. And he's like, okay, okay. So he turns around and he just strips. He keeps his boxers on, but other than that, he's naked. No shoes, no socks, no shirt, no pants. And I'm watching him take his clothes off and put them in this pile. And all of a sudden, he turns around with this grin on his face, facing me now, and changes elevation. And
oh,
as soon
Jesus.
As he did, I had a flashback of the text message that you had sent me earlier saying he was coming at you 8 times. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm about to wrestle a naked front row Brian. And sure enough, he charged me like a bull. And with that, Ben, you can head to practice, buddy. Thank you for the time.
All right. You're welcome.
Hey, I appreciate you. Take care, Ben.
See ya.
All right, guys, that was Ben Askren, you know, an often misunderstood person, including by myself. I've been a fan of Ben because I'm a fan of amateur wrestling, and some of that was probably mind-numbing to some of you listening because we don't have so many, you know what? I got to stop what we're talking about. I'm getting text by Front Row Brian right now. It says, Hector Lombard flunked a drug test. Now, hold on. Guys, stay with me. All I've got is this text message. Let me confirm that before I start a terrible rumor. Reese, are you seeing any of this? You got your internet up?
I'm pulling it up right now.
All right, we're pulling it up now. Bear with us. Of course, as quick as the internet moves, this show is delayed a little bit, so we will not be breaking this here. Let's see what this says. MMA fighting. That's Helwani's site. And it just says Hector Lombard fucked a drug test. Well, I have no news, but I hope I'm not spreading a rumor there. I will be right back. Chael Sonnen and John P. Marimi will be with us. Don't go anywhere. Brace yourself. DraftKings.com is delivering a haymaker to the world of fantasy sports, introducing Daily Fantasy MMA at DraftKings.com. To that I say about time. It's a bit exclusive to football. DraftKings is now making it for MMA. This is America's favorite daily fantasy sports site where you could win enormous cash prizes every time you play. It's easy. Just pick 5 fighters, stay under the salary cap, and you could be on your way to a serious payday. You can score points for significant strikes, advances, takedowns, reversals, sweeps, and of course the knockdowns. You gain bonus points based on which round your fighters in their bouts. These are the biggest daily fantasy contests for mixed martial arts ever, and they're only at DraftKings. Don't miss out. DraftKings.com awarded $300 million last year. How much of that did you win? Hurry to DraftKings.com. Use the promo code CHAIL. Play Fantasy MMA for free this weekend during UFC 184. You could win your slice of $1 billion. Billion dollars with a B in prizes that's going to be awarded this year. Just enter CHAIL and play right now for free and only at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. I said DraftKings.
You're welcome. You're welcome with Chael Sonnen.
New Year's resolutions. Everybody's got one. You know the three that I always hear? Get in shape, be healthier, get a new job. Those are the big three. I think you guys can agree. Look, you can become a certified personal trainer with the National Academy of Sports Medicine, and you can do all three. Plus, If you don't land a job as a personal trainer within 2 months of your certification, 60 days, they will give you your money back. That's a guarantee. Not only by them, that's a Chael Sonnen guarantee. I know these guys. I've got a friend that just went through it. He did land a job. But they monitored him. Look, you can get a free 14-day sneak peek of the National Academy of Sports Medicine's fun online program at MyUSATrainer.com. MyUSATrainer.com. Restrictions apply. See MyUSATrainer.com for details and fulfill the promise that you made to yourself. Fulfill your New Year's resolution. MyUSATrainer.com. You're welcome.
Now, back to your welcome.
Yes, thank you.
Here's Chael Sonnen.
We're back to your welcome. I'm Chael Sonnen, and of course, on the line is the longest returning guest that the show has ever had, John P. Marini. John, what's going on, buddy?
Not too much, man. How's the training going for the big WrestleMania match?
Right, yes, WrestleMania. You know, I'm not crazy about the way things have shook out with those guys, if you really want to get down to it. I've actually had a couple of unpleasant phone conversations in the last couple of weeks with a differing of opinion, and I'm willing to concede that their opinion is more valuable than mine, but either way, I can tell you, man, it hasn't been pleasant.
That's unfortunate.
It is unfortunate. I totally agree with that, and you know, I'm trying to get some, ultimately, there's two things at play. First off, I'm a fan, but my fanmanship, we're going to make up a new word here, of professional wrestling is largely embellished. I watched a little bit as a kid. You know, I came back during the Austin days. I watched the CM Punk time. I don't really follow it that close, but I am a fan. Where there's a live show, I like to go. And in this case, WrestleMania and going out to that, man, that's just a good time for me. But I try to put those guys over. I try to talk about it a lot. One, because I care. But two, I kind of feel like I'm being an extra good fan by giving plugs and doing certain things. And I'm learning that, man, they like to control anything that they do. And they don't like outside forces of any kind. And that's fine with me. But I'm learning that. It's still new. It's not what one would have guessed. And my other side of it is I'm trying to get something going. You know, with Vandalay, we're trying to figure this thing out. We got all sorts of red tape that we're both, you know, sitting outside the principal's office with our dunce caps on. And, you know, I'd much rather go over to Japan and do something where it's still more of a shoot. But, you know, whatever. I don't even want to talk about it. How's everything else? How's the world of John?
You know, it's pretty weird. I guess this relates to my world that the confusion somehow got out. I don't even know who leaked it. It must have been you, that me and you were meeting up to grab a bite to eat in San Francisco on WrestleMania weekend, and somehow it got confused that you were meeting up with Kevin Dunn and WWE. It's a strange rumor how that telephone game works.
Well, it is. I'll tell you, though, you know, the whole thing came up. I was sitting on Michael Landsberg's show, which he's a Canadian guy, and he's huge. He's huge in that part of North America. We don't have his channel. It's called TSN, which, to put it in perspective, is kind of like Canada's version of ESPN. It's a huge sports network. And he did a little rapid-fire section of his show where he threw a few things at me. And going, you know, going out to WrestleMania and meeting with folks with the WWE came up. And when, you know, it's kind of like Twitter, John. When you only have 140 characters, you get misinterpreted so often, and things take on a life of their own. And it just went in a weird direction. I'm still coming. We're still going to have a great time. But there you go for WrestleMania, man. And I'll tell you this, if you want to talk wrestling just for a brief second, if they reverse course and they stick Daniel Bryan against Brock Lesnar, they would only be putting him in there to beat Brock Lesnar. You're not going to have a huge buildup for a number one contender and have the guy not win. And, man, that's a tough sell all day long. That is really ridiculous. And even though the fans are driving this, the fans are going to regret what they're asking. But what are you huffing and puffing into the phone all of a sudden? What is that? Got like a tornado in the background?
It's that. It's It's that sunny breeze of California. I just wanted to bring some of it to you up there in the snowy white north.
Man, I wish it was. I like the snow and I like the white. We're stuck up here with a little bit of rain, but I'm an Oregonian, man. I don't mind the rain.
I don't mind it as long as it doesn't get in the way.
The way of what? What is it that you're doing that's so pressing? Are you out there surfing? Are you with the kids riding the waves?
Yeah, you never know. It gets in the way of going to the beach. It gets in the way of walking from your car to wherever you're going. I don't mind looking at the rain. I just don't want to be in it. You
All
go
right.
out there and play in it?
No, I actually don't. I don't. I drive around in it with the windshield wipers on and wish the sun was coming out. Then I pretend I like the rain because it's the plight that I'm forced with as an Oregonian. So I'm remanufacturing my own reality to suit my circumstances. How do you like that?
Yeah, I don't like the fact that you added an O to your state to make up a name for what you guys call yourself.
What did I say? Oregonian?
Yeah.
How do you say it? Learn me. Learn me the correct way.
I wouldn't call you anything. I'd call you Oregon native. I wouldn't add letters in there so I can make up a name.
Okay. I don't know where you're going with this, but that's actually kind of funny because you're right. Everybody, you know, Californian and stuff. Yeah, you're right. You're a California native. Shut up.
Yeah, there you go. That's all people care about. No one cares about where you're from.
All right, so what's new? What do we have to look forward to? Why are you on the show today? What is it that you have to entertain our fans with? You know, it's hard to be the number one podcast out there, John. I kind of need a little something from the guests besides a tornado in the background and hearing about your weather.
I always
have you stabbed anybody today? Have you been involved in a dice game? Have you been in any underworld activity?
There's been a lot of cartel movement.
Do you know where Hoffa's buried?
If I did, I wouldn't be able to tell you that.
That's a good point.
But, you know, you did bring up something. And then, you know, I'd actually like to turn this podcast around and interview you for a few seconds.
Let's do it, my man.
I think the most newsworthy part of this podcast will be whatever you have to say.
You caught the big fish, my man. You're now in the world of media, and you got what they call the whale on the hook. Old Chael Sonnen. Welcome to the John P. Marini Show. Have at it.
Okay, so the first question that I have for you that, you know, every time we talk, I tend to try to pick your brain a little bit when it comes to behind the scenes of mixed martial arts, just as you tend to do sometimes with WWE. Here's sort of my question. Number one, the biggest news right now, Anderson Silva. I got to know, as a guy who fought him, not clean, what is your thoughts on this? Is this something that you're turning around and kind of, when the cameras aren't on, kind of smirking? Or what's your thoughts on this?
I'm curious. I can tell you this, man. The only thing that I've ever done when I begin to explain the rules as they pertain to commissions and allowable substances versus banned substances, the only thing I've ever succeeded at, John, is leaving my audience confused. I was actually talking to Adam Hunter. He's the head of MMA Roast. He's a very smart guy. He's involved in MMA, coaches kids wrestling. He knows this world. And he says, you know, Chael, I'm just confused. I'm just lost by all this stuff. So I don't, without digging too deep into it, but John, it's something that if I don't dig deep into, I make a couple of statements like Twitter, you kind of have to be able to finish your thought. So in this case, I'm going to let you know right now, I don't have time to finish my thought. I don't even have an interest in it. But my stance on Anderson Silva is I give him a pass. The guy broke his leg in half. The only thing connecting his leg to his body was his skin. And as graphic as that sounds, it's relevant because he owes it to himself. He has an obligation to himself to repair his leg. If he found a substance, okay, if he used science or medication, free market or black market, he not only had the right to repair his leg, he had an obligation to himself and to his family and to his health to put that way in front of sport. Because at the time, he was done. He's never going to fight again. If he has that injury, no commission will clear him. No coach will. He's just not going to do it. So he has to fix it. There's an order of events here. If he took that to replace his leg or to fix it, instead of people saying, hey, Anderson, why did you do it? People should be saying, hey, Anderson, what did you do? How exactly did you repair a leg that was snapped in two, not a fracture. We're talking about all the way through the bone being separated. They need to say, hey, man, how did you do that? Because this is a reality, John, of medicine in America. I've got a friend named Troy Hughes. I wrestled with him in college. We were teammates and friends, and he ended his college career. This is a bad dude on scholarship, a champion wrestler, a bad dude whose whole career came to an end at 22 years old because he slipped a disc in his back, and America had no way to fix it. Now, 2 years ago in 2013, so 17 years post his college wrestling career, he caught a plane. He went to Cyprus. And he had to pay $30,000 out of pocket because they don't take insurance, and they fixed him. He's 100% healed. But that's where American medicine is. All the conspiracy theories that you hear about the politics and the bureaucracies and the pharmaceutical companies are 100% true. They are doing things in Germany right now with stem cell research that is changing people's lives, but they can't get it on the shelf, as you will, in America. So I just don't give a damn if Anderson Silva had to turn to the black market. If he fixed his leg, he fixed his leg. Now, I understand sports another conversation. I understand he's got to operate within the box, and there's a whole other dialogue there. But before you persecute a guy who's 40 years old and coming off of a career-ending injury, let's try to put ourselves in his mindset and understand why he might have done it.
That's interesting. You know, another thing that I've actually always wanted to ask you, because I remember this, man, this had to be maybe a year or two ago, maybe less than that. I remember they interviewed Dana White one time, and they said something to him about, you know, if you retired or if you had UFC taken away. I can't remember the context of the question, but I remember his answer very clearly was, I would just leave it to Chael Sonnen to run the UFC. And I always wanted to ask you, ever since I heard him say that, and I always forget, if he did that, what would you do if you ran the UFC? Is there anything you would do differently?
Like, what would I do? Well, you know what? First off, he's just being beyond humble when he makes that statement. But I will answer your question. What would I do different? There's really only one thing in the UFC that kind of puzzles me that I think, well, if I could make a suggestion, it would be this. Look, I would make the main event the main event. You do not, by default, because you're the only championship on the fight, a card, become the main event. And I wouldn't do that. Right now, we've got a process where if there's only one belt on the line on a card, that automatically becomes the main event. I would put the main draw as the main event. And I'll give you an example. I'll take you back to September 27th of 2014. Daniel Cormier was supposed to fight with John Jones. And that's a huge fight. It's a super expensive fight. So because of that, that was really the draw on the card. There wasn't a huge supporting cast because there doesn't need to be. Well, when that fight fell apart, Demetrius Johnson, who was the 125-pound champion, and Chris Caceres became the main event. But the main draw on that card was Conor McGregor versus Dustin Poirier. When you have a main draw, when you have the one fight that people are tuning in to see, that becomes your main event. You do not take up poster space, billboard space, TV space, ticketing space by naming a show Johnson versus Caceres when you have Poirier and McGregor on the card. That would be my only pushback. You know, there's some cards where you can start the damn show. The curtain jerker can be the title fight, and this happens in boxing. Yeah, you'll have plenty of De La Hoya or Roy Jones Jr. pay-per-views where they got two or three belts on the line earlier on the night. Nobody's watching. That's those guys' fault. And, you know, if you don't have a fan base and you can't be driven, the whole business doesn't need to fail because you failed at getting fans. And, you know, to use that night as specific, the one that sold that card was McGregor and Poirier, and they had to do it on a secondary market. The first market, which is our countdown show, which is the name of the show, which is what the ticket has, which is what put the T-shirts, the posters, the billboards, went to a default main event that was only there because they had the strap on the line, not because they had the mandate of the masses. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, that makes plenty of sense. That's actually a good point. You know, coming from the wrestling world, I always felt like the title match should be put on last because I always felt that's the reason why everybody is there, you know, as far as – if you're competing in the WWE. It's to win that title. It should mean more, and you should have your biggest stars competing for it. In UFC, I think that it is a little bit different. I mean, you guys have guys catch fire, you, McGregor, John Jones on the rise, that sometimes become bigger than who currently has the title, and if that guy can get there. You know, I think watching McGregor go from a relatively unknown, a lot like you, he's kind of following your path. I've even caught him literally stealing word for word things that you've said to promote a fight. But yeah, sometimes he's the biggest star, and you're watching his ascension to the title, and he's bigger than a Mighty Mouse. But yeah, you know, I think I get it. I think in a world that you can dictate, you know, who the biggest star is, who gets the best story, like in WWE, I would always give put more effort and the better story with the main title bout. But I can see your point with UFC.
Yeah, but you know, but you make an excellent point when you talk about you put the as WWE, when you talk about you put the guy with the strap at the end of the night, when you're manufacturing popularity and you're manufacturing competitive success like you do in the WWE, they're one and the same. They're synonymous terms. Most popular, biggest draw, and champion all mean the same thing when you can control it. Listen, I want to quote.
Hope. Yeah, you hope.
I'll tell you this. I'm going to quote Jim Cornette, but Jim Cornette was quoting Kid Rock. If it sounds good, you're going to hear it. If it looks good, you're going to watch it. If it's marketed good, you're going to buy it. But if it is good, you're going to feel it. And that's the thing that goes on when you're trying to drive and sell a pay-per-view. And I need to control my words here a little bit because I don't want to begin putting people down. Demetrius Johnson is one bad son of a bitch, but to act as though people tuned in to see him versus Caceres versus McGregor versus Poirier is, man, it's just not true. And when you've got a $2 million marketing push behind it, whoever the people are tuning in to see are the ones that deserve their face in Times Square, not a default product.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that doesn't so much fall on Demetrius Johnson because, like you said, that kid's a badass. He's one of the toughest guys in the world. I enjoy watching his fights. Sometimes I find, I guess majority of the time in his case, I find that he's fighting or defending his title against guys who sometimes haven't even been on the main card of a UFC show. So that's a tough sell for someone to go, you know, I recognize that guy, I think, but I've never seen that other guy before.
Sure.
That's the tough part. You know, I think you have these stacked divisions where it's everybody's a star. You know, you have John Jones versus pick whoever you want. Both of those guys are going to be well-known, established names. But yeah, again, I'm agreeing with you. So making another point out of it.
Yeah, and there's still a way to operate within those confines. You know, I'll ask you a question. When's the last time Floyd Mayweather ever fought anybody that you ever seen on a poster before? When's the last time they ever announced? You know, you'd have to go way back to who? De La Hoya when he fought him. Maybe somebody else since then. But boy, man, I'm drawing a blank. They build somebody. This Maidana guy was a rough dude. He fought him a couple of times. Not saying the guy's not worthy. Just saying he wasn't a draw until they created it. If you go to some UFCs, we do have really big draws, but we have a bit of a hierarchy for your placement on the card. I also think that it's weird. You know, I'll play devil's advocate here to my own argument. It would be weird to put a champion, the only championship fight, and to under-promote him. I get that. This is how guys become famous. It's not a commentary to their skill level. Demetrius is just an amazing talent. But the fact of the matter remains that he wasn't the draw that night, and I just think that you could get a little bit more bang for your buck, man. I don't think there's anything wrong with putting a three-round fight last if it's the biggest draw the night. I don't see the problem with it. But
here's a question. All right. You're running. I just want to follow up on this, and not to hijack your show. Again, in reference to you running UFC, is there anything you can do? And I think 2014 was hit hard with this, but you put so much money and you get people so excited about the promotion of John Jones versus Cormier, or Chael Sonnen versus Anderson Silva, or whoever versus Cain Velasquez recently against, I can't remember, Verdum, right? And then injury. Is there a way to, there's no way to completely eliminate that, but what is it that you could do running UFC to at least alleviate some of the pain that comes along with losing your heavyweight champion? For example, I was extremely excited to go to this next pay-per-view, which was Vitor versus Weidman. Weidman's out. It's not a card I'm all that excited about. Do I love watching Ronda Rousey? Yes. Do I want to sit there for 3 hours to get to her fight, and while I'll enjoy everything, there's nothing that gets me all that excited to want to say, I'm going to drop $300 for a ticket, or I'm going to drop $60 to order it on pay-per-view when majority of the highlights now are shown on ESPN and Fox right after the fight. I mean, is there anything that you running the UFC can do about that?
Okay, they've got a couple of problems. First off, let me answer this mythically. Everything I'm about to say right now, I don't mean. I mean it in theory, but I realize when you're running a business, this doesn't work. So let me talk about theory. I would forfeit the son of a bitch. This is the only sport where we don't have a forfeit process. If you and I are going to compete, John, in anything, I don't give a damn if it's baseball, wrestling, if it's football, if we're going to go play a volleyball game, we're going to go swim each other 100 meters. We set a time and a date, and if you don't show up, I win. It's as simple as that. The Super Bowl, I really want to make this point, because the Super Bowl for 2016, 17, 18 is already set. They've got the venue, the day, and the time. If they get to a finals of a Super Bowl and one team doesn't show up, by God, they're going to crown a champion that day. Yep. The Olympic Games come around once every 4 years. If you don't show up, by hook or by crook, you're out. You don't redo a contest. You set the date, you set the rules, you set the weight class, you set it ahead of time, and I would change belts. I would have the belt change hands. I realize this doesn't work in show business, but if one guy doesn't want to make that walk on an agreed upon time, see, the whole contest is to see not who the best fighter in the world is. It's all about who's the best fighter in the world at this moment in time. And if one guy doesn't make the walk, then automatically he can't be the toughest guy. If he can't even get his ass into the ring, then he's out.
You've got my interest. So let's continue on this hypothetical card here. So Weidman calls you and he says, I'm out. I got a bum knee. I can't make it. Walk me through the process of what you're doing behind closed doors at UFC to get me a title fight at in February.
Well, a lot of times what they'll do is, I mean, what history has shown us, if a guy's out for a significant period of time, they'll run an interim championship. Now, that's a marketing ploy, and we get it, but it's an effective one. You know, the interim champion's a real thing. You know, if the real champion can't walk out there, and we all agree that we're basing the title around who's the baddest guy right now, right in this moment of time, then an interim title does work. The night that Verdum won the interim title, we need to acknowledge that he's the baddest dude in the world for right now. We also need to understand that Kane's got a couple of issues. But there's some fights that become so big that you don't want to pull them out. Here's what we do on a card. If Vitor and Chris Weidman, to use your example, are going to headline the February 28th card, that's a middleweight fight, 185 pounds. What we'll do is we'll bring in another killer fight at 185 pounds. And in this case, it was Jacare versus Yoel Romero. The theory being, if Vitor gets hurt, then we just elevate either Jacare or Yoel Romero and put them against Weidman. The theory also being that it's very rare that the champion is the one that pulls out. However, if he does, you can still do the same thing and make it an interim title or at least preserve a main event. In a fight that is as big as Vitor versus Weidman, a fight that's been promoted 3 times, there's been over $15 million in total promotion spread over those 3 fights. When you put that many millions of dollars into a bout, there's no sense in running some guy again. You might as well just kick it down the road to another card. They just did this with Jones and Cormier. That fight on its face was so big that when one guy's hurt, you just set both guys aside and you bring them back out. So I think you've got a little bit of a problem there. However, John, I want to make this final point to you. MMA is the, tell me one time in boxing, one time, I challenge you right now, give me one single time where you've ever had a main event fall apart. Tell me one Mike Tyson fight that didn't come to fruition. Tell me one Sugar Ray Leonard, one Floyd Mayweather, one Oscar De La Hoya, one Manny Pacquiao. Can you do it? Can you name one time that they put out posters, they did the press releases, and one of the guys wussed out?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't know off the top of my head, but it's not something that that happens on a regular basis like it does in UFC.
I've never heard of it. John, I've been following this since the Sugar Ray, since the Four Horsemen, the Hearns, the Hagler, the Duran, the Leonard. Since that time is when I've been involved in boxing. My dad was a fan. I'm a fan. I've never heard of it. In an MMA, these guys pull out left and right. And some guys argue that, well, the training's different and they get hurt. So what? So what? My dad was a plumber. He never missed a day of work in my life. You think he was never sick or he was never hurt? Shut up. You get up when your alarm goes off and you go to work. I mean, calling in for fights, John. The fight's 2 months away. A fight's 2 months away. I'm not using this as an example, but we've have guys that have called in sick 2 months away. How in the hell do you know you're not going to feel good 2 months from now? That's as ridiculous as the dog ate my homework. You cannot call in sick 2 months in advance. You're a wuss. They need to strip you of your time. And there's always something more than meets the eye. Every time there is. There's some reason the guy doesn't want to go that day. And it's a bunch of crap. You take it. That's it. Just like the Super Bowl. The date matters. Yeah. And if you agree to contest something on a day and you don't contest it, you lose.
Yeah, that's why Dana White wanted 100 Chael Sonnens. No, you know, here's a serious question, though, in reference to Vitor. You know, I keep up on the news, and Dana White says, hey, I offered him a fight. He turned it down. He tells me, I want an interim title fight. So I call him back, and I give him a cheetah, interim title. He turns it down. Then come to find out, I think he offered him, Musasi as an interim? And he turned that down. Who the hell did he expect to fight for an interim title if it wasn't one of these guys? I mean, you ask for an interim title fight, and then you turn down everything that he gives you. Who was he expecting to fight?
Yeah, that's a tough call. You know, Vitor got put in a tough spot. I actually spoke to Vitor yesterday, and he said, you know, I've done everything they've ever asked of me. I fought at heavyweight with Randy Couture. I fought in the tournaments, two guys in one night. I fought John Jones on very short notice. He said, man, I've got this title opportunity, and I've just got to really preserve it. And he said, you know, I know it's not good to turn down. I'm the first guy to say that. He said, but, Chael, we're talking about a title here. And I said, Vitor, man, you know, I get it. And John, I would tell you, your point's completely correct. If you're talking about an interim title, man, you're going to have to fight Murderer's Row. But I would just like to bring one small thing up, which is Vitor's not the one that ruined this fight. Or that had the fight canceled. Vitor said, look, I'll do it on this day, and I'll show up, and I'll make this weight, and I'll do the whole bit. And he's still saying that. He, you know, it was on this case, and this fight's fallen apart three times now. But in this case, it was Weidman that hurt his rib. We're talking about 60 days difference. Weidman has even said, man, maybe as quick as 30 days if you really need me, if you give me 60, no questions asked. So you kick the can down the road 2 more months. You throw Ronda in there, and yeah, Ronda hasn't been the draw that they've advertised her to be. Ronda is a humongous star. She's a major crossover star, but her draw ability. I know the last time she fought was Sarah McMahon. It's the one and only time she's been expected to carry a card. Sold about 7,000 tickets in a 12-5 arena. And the pay-per-view was also very dismal. It was right around Super Bowl. There was a few moving parts around the country where they were competing for eyeballs. But at the same time, yeah, you know, women's MMA isn't... It's not as good as it's made out to be.
Mm-hmm.
Not right now. That'll change. It's just simply not. And that's just a numbers thing. That's not an opinion or a commentary or this and that. It's just these are just simply numbers. You print them off at the end of the night and you look who sold what. And it hurts, man. It really hurts losing that fight. The good news, much like Jones-Cormier, we're still going to get it. And it's one more round of promotion. You know, I talked about the fact that they're at about $15 million in promotion. That's a little bit of an exaggeration, but we're close. By the time they promote this a fourth time, man, they're going to be the most dollar spent, most promoted fight ever. Will it be the most successful? No, probably not, but will it be the most promoted? Yeah. And is it going to be a success? Mm. It's going to be an absolute success. It'll be colossal.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, of course you agree. It's your show, my man. I'm just here to fill airtime. It's your show.
I stopped hosting this thing about a half hour ago. Did no one send you that note over the computer?
Yeah, we just got to rambling there. I'll tell you what. I got my producer here, Mike. He's holding up one finger. First, I thought he was telling me to you know what, but now I realize it was a different finger, which means we got 1 minute left, brother. You got anything to add? You got a building on fire anywhere? You want to start a rumor? You want to tell me a lie about something?
Those are always good. I hate when you put me under pressure like that.
Are we going to have fun at Mania? Tell me that. Front Row Brian sending me a text now. I was telling Front Row Brian stories earlier in the show with Ben Askren. And he's coming out. We're going to have a good time.
Well,
and
you know,
Front Row Brian just sent me a text. He says he's going to take you down. He said he's going to get drunk on Jack Daniels Black and hit you with a double leg. With a Goldberg-style double leg. That's a quote.
A Goldberg double leg?
Yeah, he's calling it something called a spear. Is that what Goldberg used to do? I'm not talking Mike Goldberg. I'm talking Bill Goldberg, the Steve Austin want-to-be.
I want him to YouTube Bret Hart's Goldberg spear, and that will be what happens WrestleMania weekend.
Is that when Bret Hart stuck like something under his shirt?
Wait, hold on. Do I have a chair next to you, Front Row Brian and Sean Waltman? I don't know. I haven't been invited to anything yet. I know you guys are all making plans all on the air.
All right, so somewhere along the way, we somehow, you know, Vandalay and I's talk somehow became a problem in the world of the social media of the WWE. We somehow ended up with more view. They have a way to track this. We had six times the attention that anyone else did on the card, and we got a really nasty phone call saying, hey, you know, this is our thing, and we've got to control this, and you guys got to chill out. They then moved my seat. I'm now in the seventh row of the first riser. I'm not complaining about my seat. I have no problem with that whatsoever, but this was like some form of punishment to me, and I'm scratching my head going, that's just weird. That's just weird that this is even happening. That's just weird that your entire industry that's solely based on speculation doesn't want people speculating about Vandalay and I. I'm in. I accept. I'll stop the speculation. But that's a really weird thing that I'm now on a phone call having this talk.
Man, all I know is if they needed someone to draw, which they desperately need, I don't know why they would tell you to keep your mouth shut, but whatever it is, hey, I'm sure that there's a place for you in my suite somewhere.
No, I appreciate that, buddy, and I am looking forward to seeing it. And I appreciate you trying to put me over, but we really did lose you there. And I'll tell you one thing, too, about wrestling, John. I don't like talking about it because I'm not as big. My fandom, if you will, of professional wrestling is largely exaggerated. When we have a show that comes to town, which is once, sometimes we'll get lucky it's twice a year, I love to go out and watch, and I'm entertained by it. But that's really it. My level of involvement, it largely gets played up. But it is WrestleMania. It's a fun time. And we're going out there. But the one thing I've learned is every time I talk about it, you know, the shoot has become the new work. When I talk and I just tell you straight up, listen, I went on this Canadian show and I only had X amount of time and everything got drawn out of proportion. That becomes the new work. So right now, when I'm telling you as clear as I can that I'm sitting in the seventh row on the first set of risers with Front Row Brian and Kevin Roberts, people think that I'm working, so there's no way. You know, that's what wrestling is, and that's part of the fun of it is you suspend reality. But I am looking forward to seeing you. I think I owe you a dinner, don't I? So I will be buying dinner. You name the steakhouse, as long as it's served medium rare. Just the way I like it.
I'm just glad you didn't invite me to a barbecue. No, hey, you know what? I do have a question, though. When I walk into the restaurant, should I be looking for Bruce Willis, or how will I know who Front Row Brian is?
You never know. Brian's elusive. He's smooth. He's never been spotted. You don't know who he is. He'll be hugging more girls than Bella Caroli. That's all you need to know. John, Mike Allison's giving me the boot. I got to go, brother. Have a great day.
All right, see ya.
All right, everybody. I am Chael Sonnen. That was John P. Marini. Earlier in the hour was Ben Askren. Really had a fun time today. Appreciate you all tuning in. And we will be back next Wednesday. Same Chael Sonnen time, same Chael Sonnen channel. You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
When you're ready to buy a car, True Car is changing car buying forever. Yes, True Car helps car buyers get rid of the fear that they might overpay. Every day, True Car users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings, and True Car users save an average of $3,221 off of MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, download the True Car mobile app or go to TrueCar.com to find out what others paid for the car that you want. Then register to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. Third step is simple. Take your guaranteed savings certificate to the True Car certified dealer for a better hassle-free car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. With True Car, you can save time, save money, and never overpay. To see how much you can save on the car you want, simply download the True Car mobile app or visit TrueCar.com today.